brain will be affecting the purpose, so should I just start by reading them? Right. Good morning, my name is Alison Hutton. I'm the author of the submission and primary evidence for this hearing. My experience is set out in my primary evidence. The board submitted that the entire area of the subject land be rezoned as medium density residential zoning, including that part of the land that is within the outer control boundary, the OCB. The council had originally notified the land to be rezoned as medium density residential. The planner section 42A report now seeks rural zoning. The land is within the council's proposed urban growth boundary and is across the road from the Frankton Town Centre and should logically be rezoned for urban purposes. Rezoning the entire area as medium residential density zone will still allow the prevention of inappropriate activities on land not deemed appropriate, for example, within the OCB and the outstanding natural landscape boundary where it is determined by this hearing. The medium density residential zoning will allow development that can fit within the constraints of the land and allow it to be used in the most efficient way possible. The council has been assessing the land for development for a number of years. During my time as senior policy analyst for the council, the rezoning of the rural land on the northern side of the state highway was considered a priority after Plan Change 19 was resolved. It was considered an important piece of the puzzle in relation to rural zoning remaining within the council's proposed urban growth boundary. I consider that unless the zoning is considered comprehensively, the land from Quail Rise to Hanson Road will be the subject of property by property, discretionary rural general resource consents, potentially resulting in ad hoc development and at an important entrance into Queenstown. The proposed plan included the church's land as medium density residential zoning. I support this zoning. To now consider that the land should remain as rural general zoning, even outside of the parameters such as the OCB and ONL line, will not result in effective or efficient outcomes. In terms of rebuttal evidence, Kimberly Banks for QLUZ. I believe that it is possible for the entire portion of the site to be rezoned. Activity sensitive to aircraft noise, SNs, can be restricted to areas outside of the OCB. This approach has been used recently by the Environment Court through Plan Change 19, Franklin Flats B Special Zone, where industrial uses are confined to this area. Having split zoning will make consents complicated, resulting in two different assessments, which I consider unwarranted on such a small piece of land. A consistent zone with differing rules inside and outside of the OCB is more efficient. John Kyle for QAC. I believe a rule in the medium density zone, or whichever other zone the Commissioner sees fit to rezone the land, to prohibit SNs would appropriately mitigate any risks that Mr. Kyle identifies with rezoning rural land within the OCB. This is the same approach that has been taken in both the Franklin Flats B zone and Remarkables Park Special Zone and allows the efficient use of land while protecting the airport's interests with regards to reverse sensitivity. I believe that any land outside the OCB should be available for any activities, including SNs, subject to appropriate zoning rules. Should Queenstown Airport consider that land outside of the OCB is also sensitive to aircraft noise, then it should seek to amend the locations of the air noise boundaries in the district plan as part of a first scheduled process. In conclusion, I consider that the rezoning to medium density residential is appropriate for the following reasons. It is within the urban growth boundary and directly across the state highway from a high density mixed use urban area. It can accommodate both residential and non-residential activities and achieve setbacks from the state highway. Leaving zoning as rural is a default and requiring all development to undertake a discretionary consent gives no security to the landowner and will lead to ad hoc development. The land will never be farmed effectively, which is really the only permitted use for the site. The Section 32 criteria set in this Act of Strategic Evidence is met by the proposal as I identified in my primary evidence. And rezoning the land now as part of the district plan review ensures that the future development can occur in a coordinated way. Thank you.
I'd like to discuss the OEL.
Okay.
So we'll have a conversation.
Okay.
The consent that's been granted on your client's side.
That hasn't been granted.
Hasn't been granted yet?
No, it's been submitted and it is the subject of a notified hearing probably at the end of September, but no date has been set as yet.
Thank you, that's clear that question. Mm-hmm. And you have designed it, however, so that it works with all of the constraints within your particular property.
Yes, I didn't prepare the resource consent for the church. That was actually Rosalind Groves, who was just here, Rosalind Devlin. But I'm okay with it and I've gone through it and attended the urban design panel meeting. So what the church was trying to do, essentially, was as expediently as possible submit a resource consent that worked within the parameters, not trying to go outside of the realms of what would be possible, creating a more difficult consent. So they did, for this first stage, acknowledge the council's location of the O&L boundary. But the consent, and I think that's explained in Mr. Monsall's evidence, was a two-stage process, the first stage being the church and St. Man's, and the second stage, some more residential development as well.
In considering your client, the future of your client's land, did you also look at the future of the other land in this section of Franklin Flats Mall? And consider in particular the role of the O&L and its relationship to the appropriate zoning?
I have. I've not being a landscape architect, I think I've got more ability to look at it sort of, I don't know how I'd pose it, but in a way that I'm looking at the land in a totalitarian sort of, in essence, everything. Like for me, the O&L boundary is defined in the proposed plan seems sort of out of kilter when you've got the power lines above it, which are a real man-made type structure. There's so much going on that little piece of land between a busy state highway and the O&F that the location could really help or hinder people's use or efficient, effective use of that land. And I believe, personally, with the power lines where they're located, that to me isn't an outstanding feature, really, in the natural term. Very important, but I believe that their location, I think, gives a little bit more potentially flexibility in terms of the location of the appropriateness of the location of that line.
Have you had a chance to look at the landscape evidence of all of the various witnesses? Because there's, I think it's Mr. I can remember their names now, Mr. Skelton, who talks about the cultural features.
Yeah, I think that's a
sort of
much better way of describing it than
there's
mine.
There's a geomorphical basis for Dr. Reed's distinction of the land, and there's the influence of cultural factors or cultural overlays or whatever the...
And I think I agree with that. When I look at the land as a planner, I'm not looking at just landscape or just this, I'm looking at it and it's sort of, cultural as well as natural.
And just to follow that one up, Mr. Skelton, of course, chose the water race as the O&L boundary. Did you consider whether or not was an appropriate boundary?
I didn't consider myself if I thought that was appropriate or not.
You, as a planner, where would you put the O&L boundary? If you were sitting there trying to decide all the different options?
I would definitely be looking for reference points. So when in the past, if I've considered a rezoning of a piece of land, you either look at something that makes sense, and it might be a property boundary, it might be a road boundary, or it might be a defined a landscape sort of characteristic, like an escarpment or something like that. So in this case, I'd definitely be looking for reference points such as the water race, the power lines as appropriate tools, and what would be considered outstanding and what wouldn't. And I would, if there was
nothing else there but a water race, well, that is defined, that is in the ground, and that might be a good, yeah, a good alternative location.
Thanks, that's helpful. Medium density residential zoning, is that high some of this zone for this, not just your client's property, because your clients are going to do what they're going to do. They could have done it in any zone.
That is
what's right for this area.
That is correct. I guess the submission was founded on what the council initially proposed, so that's what the church looked at. Could they fit in with that, could they not? I guess if there's any others, for a start, I think that rural general zoning is inappropriate, which I've sort of said, but the next best alternative zoning for the client, when we originally sort of drafted this submission, as you've seen from Mr. Monson's evidence, they're wanting to do residential development. They see that as a need. Whereas I know some of the other identified appropriate zonings by some of the other submissions on the northern side, business mixed use, potentially local shopping centre and the like, they would create or allow for the level of development anticipated. But the one thing that I guess, or the one sort of rule structure that may be inappropriate from the church's point of view would be in those business type zonings, that there's no residential on ground floor level. Residential has to be above ground floor, so you're basically saying that you need to have some form of business at that lower level, which is different from the church's aspirations, I guess, and what they've put in their resource consent that's being processed.
And the answer to my question, which was, if you were looking at this as a blank slate, what would you recommend as the most efficient zone for all of you?
I'd always considered that some form of median high density zoning was appropriate for that side of the land, that side of the state highway. You do have some, I guess, interesting pressure points within that area from Quail Rise to Henson Road, and that you've got an established Delta yard with all the electricity and stuff, and I don't see that probably ever moving. And you've also got an industrial use which has existing use rights, and given that location on the state highway, they might not even want to move either. So you do have those, I guess, pressure points that you need to zone around, or make sure that there's appropriate setbacks, landscaping, whatever, from any residential activity either side. But that answer doesn't take into account the OCB for the airport as well. So you've got, there's that factor that needs to be acknowledged as well. If assets which are residential, and I think and visitor accommodation in most cases.
And churches.
And churches, mm-hmm. Community activities. Yeah.
So how would you handle the OCB?
That's under that, within that area, you would be looking to have activities that weren't SANs. Might be, if you're talking from a needs point of view, business or industrial activities that are mostly undertaken within a building, so you could have something smart from the state highway in terms of look and appearance, but the ability to do activities that wouldn't be affected by airport noise.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Under any form of residential zoning, what's the mechanism to restrict asset within the OCB?
It's usually a rule within that specific zone. So within, say, the case of Freedom Flat Special Zone B, there is an activity table of what activities are considered appropriate. So outside of the OCB, residential is considered appropriate, so it's a permitted activity inside a building, which is usually appropriate. But within that OCB, the residential and VA activities and other SMs are prohibited, and permitted activities are those activities that can cope, essentially.
So has that rule been drafted? Is there a rule attached to this submission?
I don't think I drafted a rule. It was in there for the airport. I can check on that. And it also just depends how the plan has been set up, but I see it as a row in the activity table saying activities sensitive to aircraft noise are prohibited whatever in the out of control boundary. And as simple as that, so that there is, when you're looking at a piece of land and started scrolling through on what was appropriate or not, that it was apparent.
So something still to be done.
Pardon me, sir?
Something straightforward still to be done.
Yeah.
Okay, can I take you to your evidence and check?
Yes.
This question was noted there at the time. And then in terms of the objectives and policy changes that we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
So you want recognition of non-residential activities.
Mm-hmm.
Policy Act 275, has that been accurately quoted? It seems you've added the words where practical, but earlier on, in the words, which I'm assuming are original text, starts off with talking about low impact approaches to stormwater management and on site treatment and storage. It ends up in public transport infrastructure. Weird word.
It does seem weird, and there is every likelihood that I could have made a mistake, which I have.
But that's not quite accurate.
No. Stormwater management on site are enabled to limit demands on public infrastructure networks.
So
remove transport. Yeah. I got all excited and morphed.
Can you give me the spot in your evidence, please?
It is on page 9 of my evidence, on the bottom of the page, under policy 8.275. In the second to last line, just
got it.
Scroll through transport, so it's public infrastructure networks, where practical.
Yeah.
It's watching.
Okay, next page, policy 8.211.1.
Yes.
You suggested that we include the word council includes provision within the LCP as a priority. Can you really use an RMA policy to direct the council what it does in its LCP?
Usually, as far as my experience would go, you'd have the both processes working in tandem. So council would be looking at rezoning land and making sure that on the infrastructure side of it, that the LTP was at least moving along in a similar time frame, so that once developers did want to develop that land, there would be facilities there to be used.
What is the situation with water supply on all there?
There is
water. Is it constrained?
I don't think it's terribly constrained. The council has been pushing, as far as I'm aware, and I can't quite this, but I do know that council has recently been pushing to the tune of millions of dollars into new water supply, which would service that land as well as the 5 mile and Marcus Park. But I'd have to double-check on that.
Isn't it something that would be a natural part of the subdivision consent process anyway? If there wasn't water supply, then
you'd have to find it,
yeah. I appreciate, I mean, we both worked at senior level and local, and local government units, so you appreciate what you say about working together with the,
with
the infrastructure provider, but I'm not sure if you could just quite make that direct linkage.
No, that's a fair comment.
That certainly is. And in this case, where you've got a council that's showing reluctance at the moment, you may not get that seamless behaviour. Yeah. Let's check what else we've got. So in terms of 8.2.11.6, a bit further down, you're suggesting really simplifying that policy about walking and cycling.
Yes.
Is there a particular reason for that?
Essentially that it would be quite difficult for this to be done on a landowner by landowner basis. And I consider that it would be something that should have been done at a high level sort of structure plan area, structure plan instance. Because I don't think each landowner, and you've probably seen the size of the lots along there, should each be trying to do their own public transport station. All of that sort of on a piecemeal basis, that should be sort of done strategically, I think.
So you're essentially just looking at your farm site.
I am for...
But I mean, if other sites
yeah.
were to be included, wouldn't those provisions would possibly remain?
Yeah, I think a safe... And leaving all of these three bullet points.
Yeah.
Well, definitely the second, I think, should be for everybody, the form and layout, which covers walking and cycling. But I don't think for each side that you'd have necessarily little waiting areas right along that state highway from shelter from the weather. That might not be appropriate if there was going to be a good underpass or something like that. Like, what I'm saying is these are all quite specific, and if they were done for each different site along there, I think could look quite
odd. I hear what you're saying, but does
yeah.
the policy actually require that? I mean, looking the one immediately above that you haven't amended, does refer specifically to within individual properties, but this one just talks about within the area.
Yes, yeah.
I'm wondering whether it does require each of those features, so that policy does go as far as you think it does.
I just wonder if it wasn't undertaken on a sort of northern Franklin Flats way, sort of.
How possible it all is.
Yeah, at the start, then it does get difficult when you're testing each single development against that entire policy.
Absence of overall structure plan.
What was that, sorry?
Absence of overall structure plan.
Mm. Yeah.
Really, in circumstances, only the council is likely to comply if anybody does.
Yes. Yeah, I guess that was the intention for that side of the land, side of the state highway. That was one of the proposed plan changes which was in the list to undertake by the council. It just dropped off.
Part of the area anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
On page 6 of your reference, paragraph at the top of the page again, and you're talking about the recommendation of the Northern Zone rural,
mm-hmm.
are you suggesting there's a scope issue in relation to Ms. Banks' recommendation?
Potentially, yes.
I thought there was a submitter who asked for it all to stay rural when it wasn't rural anyway, but still.
Yeah, though two submitters submitted and supported rural zoning, none of the landowners were saying that. So that was where I made that, I guess, distinction that I think one of the as I remember rightly, one of the submitters from the Quail Rise area wanted it to remain as a rural corridor. Whereas when I looked at all the submissions lodged by parties along that state highway, none of them were in support of it either remaining rural or going from the council's proposed medium density zoning back to rural. All of the submissions either wanted similar or some other urban zoning for that area of land.
So you're saying that there is a submitter seeking rural, but it's not one of the landowners?
Yes, that's what it says.
Anybody can make a submission on anybody else's land.
Oh, definitely. And that's the first scheduled process.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
If you just follow the logic of that, if it was someone in Quail Rise, would giving effect to their submission involve putting high density user entry closer to the on the land which is presently in rural state?
Yeah, probably not. I haven't checked to see if that submission then made a good no, because that was a 42A recommendation for the high density. So unless they remained part of the process and kept looking at the information that was coming from council, they might not even be aware of it. I'm not sure. As I remember it, given that it was a couple of years ago that submissions were lodged nearly, I think it was a lay submitter as opposed to somebody who was represented by a consultant or a lawyer.
Maybe you could phone them.